Game week 29 is here, and the chances are game week 28 isn't quite going as well as you thought it would, as that double Bournemouth clean sheet didn't really materialise. Now, for some reason, I've over-engineered the hell out of this upcoming game week. It's just four games, eight teams involved, and I'm going to do a deep dive in every single one of them. Just to continue the point, labour the point even more, this is draft, so self-flagellation is the name of the game. I've also put together a top 50 players list of who I'd want if I was just doing a redraft for game week 29 only, to give you an idea of who I think you should go for in the waivers. So let's get straight into it. This is episode 163 of the Draft FC podcast. Welcome back to the Draft FC podcast, the podcast, website and YouTube channel dedicated to all things official draft FPL. My name is Mitch and I'm your host for another game week preview, going over waiver options, hidden gems and general Premier League chat ahead of game week 29. Now, obviously, game week 28 hasn't quite finished yet. We've still got Bournemouth against Luton to go tomorrow night to round things off. And I know a lot of us listening will have some Bournemouth and Luton players to try and bring up the score in what, for many of us, myself included, hasn't quite gone as well as it could have done. I'm currently sat on 39 points through the weekend games, which isn't terrible, hoping to try and push that nearer to 50 after tomorrow night. Now, I'm recording this episode, as you can probably have guessed, on Tuesday the 12th of March. So any team news, injury developments or press conference info is up to date as of then, and of course, subject to change. The biggest changes this week will likely come from the European games, which are playing as we speak, and also later in the week with the Europa and Europa Conference Leagues. As I said in the intro, this isn't going to be quite the normal game week preview, so I'm not going to go through a main section, hidden gems. Because of how few matches we are, I've just really taken a deep dive into those, redissected each team, their form, lineup possibilities, and really who we're going to be looking at on the waivers heading into this weekend. So without further ado, let's get straight into it. So a quick look at waiver watch before we get into that. The players coming in last week, really unsurprising, 8 out of the top 10 moves were Bournemouth or Luton players coming in. The players going the other way, Senesi's injury obviously saw lots of people who'd been banking on him get rid. Hwang, Chilwell, Adingra, Adebayo and Doku were some of the other players regularly making way. So let's have a look then at the four games we've got this weekend. So we've got Burnley, Brentford, Luton Forest, Fulham Spurs and West Ham against Villa. So starting with Burnley against Brentford, let's have a look at some of the form. So Burnley, the home team, their last six games at home, just two draws and four losses. The two draws have been against their weaker opponents, Fulham and Luton. The losses, to be fair, against some decent sides, but they've also lost to Everton, who are obviously struggling with them. Burnley have the worst home form in the Premier League this season, with just one win and two draws from their 14 home games so far. Brentford away from home, not the best form either. Five losses from their last six and just one win against Wolves. If we look a little bit deeper into that, the five losses that they have had in the last six are against Arsenal, West Ham, City, Spurs and Palace. So amongst those, four London derbies and the fifth away at the Etihad. So, you know, not the worst away games to lose and probably ones where for the majority of them, they weren't the favourites on paper. The reverse fixture earlier on in the season was a convincing 3-0 win for Brentford back in game week 9. The head-to-head record historically between these two teams is fairly even. 33 matches played. Brentford have won 10. It's been 10 draws and Burnley have won 13. Though the two have done quite a good job of dodging each other between the leagues, and they only actually overlapped in the Championship once, which was in the 15-16 season. On to Luton against Forest. Luton, the home team here, from their last six home games, they've got two wins and four losses, which again, not the best. Luton are a better team away from home so far this season, which is something I kind of alluded to, I thought would happen pre-season due to the limitations of Kenilworth Road. Forest's away form is maybe slightly better. One win, two draws and three losses from their last six, but again, not great. The reverse fixture in game week 9 was a 2-2 draw. And both teams had started the season disappointingly at that point. And really, the picture remains largely the same. Head-to-head record, a lot more matches played than Burnley and Brentford. 58, to be exact. Luton have won 23. There's been 18 draws and Forest have won 27. So again, a fairly even matchup historically. And given the current look of the Premier League table, this is probably the most important game of the weekend and one of the most important single matches of the season so far, really, particularly with Forest facing an imminent points deduction, which I'll mention a little bit more shortly. Next is Fulham Spurs in a London derby. Fulham's home form recently hasn't been too bad. 3 wins, a draw and 2 losses from their last 6 at home. Spurs away, 2 wins, 3 draws and a loss. So again, not too bad. For both sides, in 5 of their last 6, both teams have scored, as in both teams in that fixture have scored. So if you'd put on a both teams to score bet, you'd have won. And for Spurs, that has been true for 9 of their last 10 games. So basically what that's saying is the majority of games that Spurs are involved with, neither side is keeping a clean sheet, which kind of fits in with what we would think of if we think of recent Spurs results. The reverse fixture was a 2-0 win for Spurs in game week 9, which kind of came towards the end of their excellent opening run of form up to game week 10. In terms of the head-to-head record, a lot more one-sided than the previous two we've just mentioned. There's been 104 meetings between Spurs and Fulham in their existence. Spurs have won 55 of those. There have been 30 draws and Fulham have won just 19 of those meetings. So I said very one-sided, and Spurs haven't lost at Craven Cottage for over 10 years now. The final game is West Ham against Aston Villa. So West Ham's home form recently, 2 wins, 3 draws and a loss, which isn't bad. Villa's away form, very impressive, 4 wins, 1 draw and just the 1 loss. Aston Villa have been pretty much just as impressive home as they have been away, and they're sitting about 4th in both overall league tables if you just separate them out home and away. West Ham have again been fairly equal in their home and away form, but they're sitting kind of in mid-table for both. The reverse fixture was a 4-1 home win for Villa back in game week 9. And the head-to-head record for these two, again, is fairly equal, similar to the other two games. So it's been 39 wins for West Ham, 45 for Villa, and 35 draws. So really, if you were just flipping a three-sided coin based on those historical results, it could land on anything. And prior to Villa's win earlier this season, West Ham have dominated the recent meetings, though, and hadn't lost in the previous 10 meetings between the two, which for a team like West Ham is a fairly dominant run of form. Now, let's take these teams one by one, have a little look at any recent injury developments and how that might impact on the lineups. Of course, as always, you'll be able to see our predicted lineups on draftfc.co.uk. Even if you're not signed up, if you just go to our main homepage and click on the drop-down menu, you'll find our predicted lineups on there. Equally, if you just Google Premier League predicted lineups, you'll see us high up on the list there with some other big names. So I've already updated them for game week 29 based on some of the work that I've put into this episode, but I will continue to fiddle with those right up until the game week deadline and beyond as more news comes in. So let's have a look at Burnley. No recent injuries really to talk about. Lineup has been unchanged in the last 2 matches. We've seen Amdouni, Goodmanson and Brownhill sit out these last 2. Brownhill was obviously banned for one of those, in favour of Bruun Larsen, Cullen and Vitinho playing on the right side of midfield. I suspect we'll see a fairly similar lineup again. Bruun Larsen was subbed at half-time against West Ham, with Burnley obviously 2-0 up at that point, which changed them from a 4-4-2 to more of a 4-5-1, with Odegaard then dropping slightly deeper to left wing and Brownhill becoming a third man in midfield. With hindsight, obviously a very negative move, and perhaps done slightly too early in the game, which ultimately saw them blow their 2-0 lead and ended 2-2. That right wing spot, I'm not 100% will stay as Vitinho. Goodmanson could come back in for him, but Vitinho is possibly seen as a safer player going the other way, given he is naturally a defender and is, of course, listed as such in FPL. He had a decent game the week before against Bournemouth in game 27, had expected goal involvements in that game of 0.58, despite not getting one. But he's definitely somebody worth keeping an eye on. If you fancy the Burnley defender with upside, he's probably the most obvious candidate and obviously playing out of position. As I said, the only slight doubt is that I'm not 100% sure he is nailed to line up there again, but I probably will end up going with him in my predicted lineup. On to Brentford. Again, no major recent injuries. Most of the guys that we know are out have been out for a long time, and it's not expected that any of them will return this week. Reguilón's the main one. Probably would have started the last game if he was fit, but it doesn't sound like that injury is too bad, and from the sounds of things, could be back for this weekend. Visser and Tony, I think, will continue up top. Defensively, the back three more or less has to be Collins, Zanka and Asia for the time being. The only thing that could throw a spanner in the works is if Thomas Frank changes formation. But so far, we haven't really seen anything to suggest that that's likely. But once Mbeumo is back fit in a few weeks, then we could see that formation shift to accommodate a front three that we were used to seeing last year. Midfield is really where we've seen the majority of the tinkering in the lineups. Norgaard is the most consistent starter. Did come off with a knock in the last game, but that's been downplayed in comments afterwards. With him, we've seen Onyeka and Yanel as the main other two pairing with him recently. Jensen has started a couple from the bench now, but he could easily make a return to the side if they want to mix things up a little bit. On to Luton. Certainly can't say that there are no injury problems here for Luton. Injuries are really hampering them at the moment, and they find themselves just close enough to the pack above that it's just, yeah, they're just finding these setbacks at just the wrong time. But credit to them, they're keeping their chins up and they seem to be grinding out good performances if the results aren't quite matching up to it. Obviously, the team they're against this week, Nottingham Forest, are the team just above them. They could leapfrog them. If you factor in potential points deduction for Forest as well, that will give Luton a lot of optimism. They obviously still have the game tomorrow night against Bournemouth, so we'll learn a lot in terms of the makeup and how they line up in that game as to whether they're just going to fit some new personnel in or if we have a slight change in tactics and system. Adebayo could be the most promising returnee, and we'll have to wait and see what the comments are in the pre-match presser later in the week if we don't see him tomorrow. But would obviously be a massive boost to any draft manager that's been holding on to him. And I imagine if he's fit enough, he will start. In midfield, Barkley, Clark and Chong, I don't see any reason why they don't carry on. They've been fairly reliable performers. In defence, that is where they are massively short. Osho has possibly picked up a decent injury in the last game, which leaves them with Mengi and Burke as the main two fit centre-back options. Sounds like Bell is done for the season. Lockyer, there's no real comments on when he'll be back, but it sounds like he won't be back this season. Anderson also out for a while. So they either drop in someone like Hashioka to sit in as a right centre-back. He's obviously more of a conventional right-back. Or they change shape slightly and go to a back four. This would obviously then limit their utilisation of wing-backs, which is a big part of their system. So they'd have to make a decision about, particularly for the likes of Alfie Doughty, does he drop back into a conventional left-back spot, or is he allowed to be deployed further forward in a conventional left midfield spot? I feel like the likely scenario here is they keep to the same system and find some extra cover to slot in the back three. But as I said, I think we'll learn a lot more on Wednesday with how they line up against Bournemouth. For Forest, again, injuries not really concerned for them. They did have a little period a few weeks ago and lots of people going away for AFCON. But to be honest, they've pretty much got a fully fit squad and that's not really helping them at the moment. Injury is not a concern for them. The concern for me is trying to predict their lineup. The starting 11 against Brighton was odd, to say the least. We didn't have Hudson-Odoi, Elanga, Awoniyi. They all started on the bench. We had Wood and Origi starting together, which are not two strikers I'd expect to be able to dovetail that well, especially without many runners being able to go beyond them. So yeah, predicting the Forest 11 this week will be tricky, and I know lots of you will be paying attention to it due to them playing against Luton, which for a lot of us, we look at the fixture list, we see who's playing Burnley, who's playing Sheffield United, and who's playing Luton. I would just bear in mind, though, that the bookies, and I would throw myself as another voice in there included, currently have a draw as the most likely outcome. And if you had to pick a winner, Luton are currently the bookies' favourites to win that game at home. Given their last performance, Forest that is, and the pressure on this game, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a number of changes to the lineup that we saw in that game against Brighton. I'm predicting potentially up to 5 changes. I think a lot of that front three will change. I think there could be a change in midfield and a change at centre-back. So, yeah, take whatever prediction I come out with a strong pinch of salt. But if you are just looking for a streamer for the week, I wouldn't be quite as enamoured with picking in a Forest player as it might seem quickly on paper. So yeah, just bear that in mind. I saw a comment on a Forest fan thread that they felt they were having very Leicester City vibes from last season, which, you know, with the team having sort of seemingly enough quality on paper, but just not having the chemistry to put a cohesive performance together, you know, just being able to show little flares of of good play here and there. I say the looming points deduction will almost certainly nudge them into the relegation zone. And it almost feels like they're just waiting for it to happen. And I think for Forest, the sooner it comes, the better, as at least they'll know where they stand. And that may just galvanise the squad to start pulling out some results. But we'll have to wait and see. For Fulham, probably out of all the eight teams, probably have the least to say. No real injury considerations. And one of the most stable lineups in the league at the moment. So I'm not expecting too much change. The only change I am expecting is probably Polina coming back into midfield. But other than that, I think you pretty much know what you're going to get. For Spurs, Richarlison could be back, but I don't expect him to start. I expect him probably to be on the bench. The other main consideration is how Mickey van der Ven is and how bad his injury is. He obviously came off sort of soon into the second half in that Villa game. Obviously a concern given he's had a long-term injury or a long-term muscular injury already this year. So if there's news that he's out, obviously opens the door for Dragozin to come in, who is available in the vast majority of leagues. So I'd expect him to be a popular pickup. The injury has so far been downplayed for van der Ven. And so given the international breaks coming up too, I wouldn't look at Dragozin as being anything more than a one-week punt unless we get some announcement that van der Ven's out for a prolonged period of time. I think we'll see the same midfield from the Villa game, Saar, Bissouma and Maddison. The front three is interesting and I think still remains in flux. It's another area where there's you know, talking as a Spurs fan, this is where it's always difficult to be objective when predicting the lineup, because there's always that little niggling part of my brain that's wanting to predict the team that I want to see, which may not be the team that Ange Postecoglou wants to see. So, I mean, in the last game, Johnson performed very well on the left side. He had one game earlier on in the season on the left side, which I forget who against now, where he was pretty dreadful. So that's now made it a lot more difficult in my own mind to predict, because it opens up another combination. Given recent form, I'd love to see a Werner, Son, Johnson front three with Kulusevski and Richarlison to come off the bench. But Kulusevski has started the majority of games and rarely gets a rest, which means the odds tell us that Johnson, Richarlison and Werner are competing for one spot. I think for the purposes of this week, all five remain in play. I'd rather have 20 minutes of Timo Werner, for example, than I would a lot of the starters from the other clubs playing this weekend, you know, including possibly some of those Forest players that aren't in great form. And I'm expecting my predicted lineup will be the same as it was pretty much against Villa, with Johnson, Son and Kulusevski. Next to West Ham, we knew that Emerson could have been dropping out for Creswell, and indeed we saw that at the weekend. Otherwise, a reasonably fit and predictable squad for West Ham. Moyes tinkered with the starting lineup a little bit against Burnley. It didn't really seem to work. Alvarez came on, I think, at half-time for Phillips, who again failed to impress. And we saw Zouma drop out too for Agued. So we had a Mavroponos and Agued combination. I haven't seen much of the highlights from that game, but obviously going 2-0 down to Burnley before half-time doesn't fill you with great confidence, but seemed to pick up with a tweak in midfield, so perhaps it wasn't really the defence's fault. Certainly not that first goal from David Fofana. Can't really blame any centre-backs for that one. West Ham play Freiburg on Thursday, so that'll give us some lineup clues. I expect West Ham will go full strength 11 for that one. That tie is still poised. I think Freiburg may even have a 1-0 lead going into that, if memory serves. So I'll see how they line up and who's on the bench for that game. And then we'll likely predict a team that takes into account minutes and maybe resting one or two players heading into the weekend. But we'll see how they come through that one. Similar for Villa, another team that have got a European game on Thursday. Their tie is nicely poised as well in the second leg against Ajax. It was 0-0 in the first game. McGinn now has a ban after his red card against Spurs, and rightly so. Generally, Villa have been one of the most consistent teams to predict week to week. Very few changes to their 11. But they do have a bit of a conundrum now, because Ramsey's injured and McGinn is unavailable. And Kamara's obviously out long term too. So I think in midfield, we will see Douglas Luiz and Tielemans. We will then either see a third midfielder or a change in shape to allow for just those two sitting in middle. So that could be a 3-4-3 or a 5-2-3. becoming a sort of 5-4-1 out of possession, but I don't know if that seems very Emery to me. Tim Iragbunam came on for about 20 minutes against Spurs and would be the most natural replacement just to sit in there for McGinn. He's a 20-year-old Englishman who most of his first team experience came on loan at QPR last year. As I said, he is the most natural person to sit in that holding midfield role. And if he did play, I'd expect it to be at the expense of a forward player with a setup very similar to how they started versus Spurs with the two up top, which is likely going to be Watkins and Bailey. Now, as I said at the beginning, I've done, well, it's actually longer than 50 players, but I'll probably cut off a lot of the dross at the bottom of who are the sort of players I would most like to own this week. Kind of taking it as a blank slate, imagining that we were just going to redraft for game week 29 and game week 29 alone without having to worry about the rest of the season. Just who do I want to maximize points this week? I'm not going to go through the whole list now because that will be absolutely tedious. What I will do is probably try and share this on social media somewhere so you can have a little flick through. I'll probably post that on our Instagram page and on our Twitter feed too. It's one of those things. It's similar to putting together a preseason draft ranking. You kind of put players in brackets or tiers. Within those tiers, you could argue, you know, so if someone says, oh, why have you got, you know, Morris at 6 and Tony at 5? Why aren't they the other way around? They could be the other way around. I think, you know, if you're arguing over a single position change like that, if you're saying, why have you got Gibbs White at 29, I'd have him at 10, then that's a different, you know, that's a more realistic debate to get into. And I do have Gibbs White at 29, by the way, because he's been very disappointing in his output recently. But yeah, obviously a lot of the players near the top, quite high ownership in draft. So it's more about, I think, looking at some of those midfielders and defenders to pick up this week. Obviously, bearing in mind, it is just a single game week. And I know I mentioned last week, I think, or I've certainly mentioned in some messages to people, very rarely are you going to come up against someone this week who has a full 11 players playing. I had one person message saying that they are in a head-to-head league with an odd number of teams and they are playing average this week and whether four players would be enough. And I said, no, I don't think four players will be enough, but I don't think it will take much more than four. Especially if you're in a fairly large league, 10 plus, I think if you're lining up with 6 or 7 this week, you're probably going to be doing far better than the average. But you have to have a look, you know, similar to last weekend, I said it's important to have a look at how your head-to-head matchups are stacking up. There will be a lot of waivers this week, I'm sure, because people hate not having a full 11. But, you know, just play the opponent that's in front of you. If your opponent is absolutely stacked and seems to naturally already be sat on 10 starters this week because they've got, you know, the likes of Bowen, Watkins, you know, stacked up on Spurs, West Ham and Villa, just, you know, maybe even since draft day, you may, especially if you're in a head-to-head league, just chalk that up as a loss and not really go chasing after those points too much. Obviously, if you're in a classic scoring league, every week is an opportunity to put points on the board and you probably do want to try and keep up with the pack. Depends where you're jostling for position in your league. But yeah, you're just going to have to look at your individual circumstances and make sure as well that you're not dropping a player who's got too much value for the remaining game weeks. Lots of the remaining players, because of this blank, are going to have doubles down the line. So, you know, I'm trying to think of a good example. The likes of Souček, you know, he's probably going to be someone you can safely assume is going to start for West Ham against Aston Villa. If you're holding on to a decent midfielder option, again, trying to think of a good example now. Let's pull up someone who's in decent form midfielder-wise. Yeah, Pascal Gross is probably a good example. Just a really solid, performing well, regularly putting in attacking returns. Obviously, a blank this week and then an away trip to Anfield in game week 30. So you might look at it and think, oh, I'll get rid of him for Souček. Really, what are we hoping for Souček this week? He rarely scores. If West Ham keep a clean sheet, he's going to get a three-pointer. That's probably about where we're pitching him. Versus Gross, who, if you throw him into the waiver pile, someone's going to pick him up next weekend and he's gone. So, yeah, just be sensible. Don't go trying to fill an 11 for the sake of it. If you're chasing, you can maybe be a little bit more aggressive. But for the majority, as I said, I think if you're sitting somewhere around 6, 7, 8 players, don't overreach. And if you've got more than that and you can make your team work with that, then it's a bonus. Most hidden gem pick this week, just because I always like to have one. Options are really really lacking. But the one I'm going to go for is Vitinho, who we mentioned earlier. Obviously an out of position defender playing in midfield in a fixture where Burnley very much could score, even though I'm not backing them to. But in terms of upside and a very low ownership pick in 16 team leagues, yeah, he's my most hidden gem pick this week. Because there's only four games, I'm going to do some game week 29 score predictions. So I am going Burnley 0, Brentford 2. I'm going, it's probably my wildcard prediction, Luton 3, Forest 3. I'm going Fulham 1, Spurs 2, West Ham 1, Villa 1. So based on my predictions, which really I've literally just pulled out of my backside, I've not studied those too much. Brentford are the only ones I'm really backing for a clean sheet. If I was looking elsewhere, Spurs and West Ham are where I'd be looking at. Obviously, Spurs defenders could be difficult to find unless you can pull Dragozin out. West Ham and Brentford obviously going to be far more easier to get in. Now, I mentioned those two teams last week, so for some of you on the ball, may have already stashed one or two away on your subs bench this week, ready for the upcoming weekend. But if not, there should be one or two of those available in the waivers. So that's it for this episode. A reminder that the waivers will be processed this week on Friday afternoon at 1:30 UK time, with the first game kicking off on Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m. So we've got two 3 p.m. games, a late Saturday and a single Sunday match. So yeah, not a lot of football at the weekend in the Premier League, with obviously some of the cup games going on around that. A couple of things really just to ask you guys that have sort of come out of this episode. One, do you care in the slightest about my score predictions? I know there was only four results to try and predict this weekend. Is that something you'd like me to add into the pods regularly? For what it's worth, it's probably not something I'm going to necessarily track, but I don't know, maybe it's helpful if you're looking at who to stream in, who you think I'm backing. I guess the score predictions kind of distill my general thoughts and feelings about the lineups, the form, and the sort of places I think those teams are at a time. So let me know. I'm not planning on carrying it on, but if enough of you reach out and, you know, put your accumulator on at the weekend and win millions, then maybe I'll carry on doing it. Just give me a little percentage if you do. The other thing is lineup chat. Obviously, there's only four games, so doing a bit more in-depth chat into the lineups is fairly straightforward this weekend, and I'm always putting out those predicted lineups on the site, but they are just predicted 11s. There's no rationale, there's no explanation. Is that something you'd like me to explain a little bit more? Again, practicalities, it's difficult because I obviously work full-time outside of Draft FC, so I can't just jump on and, you know, do a video after the press conference info's in. I'm usually catching up with that in the evening when I get home from work. But yeah, I think sometimes it's difficult because I'm aware that I'm just putting those 11s out and I'm not able to explain the reason why I've chosen player X over player Z, for example. So yeah, let me know. Brings me on to the next bit, which is the idea of doing live streaming. Obviously, the YouTube component is a relatively new part of Draft FC and something I'm hoping to build on as we move into the future and keep this as a regular component as well as the podcast. The podcast will stay for all of the OG audio listeners. I'm not going to be stopping that, but I think there's some interesting things we can do with the video medium, and one of those is live streams. Now, that could feed into doing some lineup chat because it'd be very easy without much prep for me to jump on a live stream on a Thursday night, for example, or a Wednesday night and have the lineups on the page and basically just talk through them. It requires very little prep from me if I've already done the lineups. It'd probably only take 15 minutes, maybe something useful. Again, give me a shout, comment or DM on Twitter or X if that's something you think might be useful. The other thing that would be useful, if any of you do stream or know people that stream, I've never done it before, so if you've got any tips or advice on hardware or software to use, again, I'm all ears. The final thing, which again is completely unrelated to this, and I mean completely unrelated to this, is I know many of you will be doing or do your own cup tournaments for your draft leagues during the season. That is something we're looking to incorporate into Draft FC moving forward so that we take away, you know, the Excel spreadsheets and messing around with that. But basically, it's creating these side games to your draft league and adding to the ecosystem of your draft league and the draft chat. So one of the things that we've done for the last 2 years now is to do a Masters Golf Fantasy Tournament, which is a complete side game to our draft league. We put quite a lot of production value into it. So there's rules. We do a draft of the golfers that we want, filling in certain categories. So if memory serves from last year, you had to have an American, you had to have a European. No, in fact, you had to have a Brit. You had to have someone from the rest of the world. And you had to have someone, I think, who was ranked below 50 in the world, I think. I'll have to have a check at the rule book that we made from last year. If that's, again, if that's something that would interest your league, if you're, you know, if your league watches golf, or it's just something that you could throw into your mix for fun, again, send me a message and I'll be able to share some of the resources and spreadsheet and things that we use in order to run that. So that's it for this episode. Best of luck ahead of Game Week 29. As I said, the DMs are always open. Give us a follow on Twitter. Make sure to check out draftfc.co.uk if you haven't already. And as always, stay shook.